Think of brand names like Ford, Colgate, Ivory, Heinz, Gillette. Brand names used to connect a product to a manufacturer, but it's not so simple anymore. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has these thoughts on branding.
Amtrak is trying to perk up its image again, and they've just announced they're introducing a new brand name to designate their service, Acela. Acela isn't supposed to be the name of a railroad line or of a particular train like the Orient Express or the 20th Century Limited. The idea is that it's going to be a brand name for the experience of rail travel. As one spokesman put it, Acela reflects the feeling of what the train means. It's an indication of just how far the branding business has come. Branding began, of course, when people burned marks into the skins of cattle or criminals, the first to indicate ownership, the second to indicate reputation. And the first commercial uses of branding had something of both significations about them when winemakers started to burn their marks into the sides of casks early in the 19th century. By the end of the century, the notion had been extended to a whole range of consumer products that manufacturers had begun to package, label, and promote on a national scale. It was the age that gave us all of those brand names that are part of the American consciousness, like Colgate, Ivory, Kodak, Heinz, Wrigley's, and Gillette, all duly registered under the trademark laws that were enacted around this time. But it was left to 20th century marketers to extend the branding concept to commodities that were increasingly immaterial, first retail outlets and restaurants, then services like law, accounting, and sewer cleaning, till finally we've reached the point where we have brand name religious groups, brand name psychotherapies, brand name charities, brand name colors and flavors. And of course, the digital age has set off a new brand rush in things like processors, programming languages, and search engines. For a long time, I figured the branding process had reached its logical culmination when Volkswagen started promoting the brand Pfaffenhügen, the unpronounceable name of an impenetrable concept that was apparently drawn from Hegelian metaphysics. But Amtrak's Acela gives this one a run for its money. Branding has been changing in other ways, too. Back in the days when wine merchants were burning their names into casks, it was a simple matter of associating a particular product with a particular manufacturer. Over time, though, the connections have been weakening on both ends. On the one hand, we often have no idea who's on the other end of the branding iron, particularly as brand names are freely traded from one manufacturer to the next. Starting this year, Rolls-Royces are going to be made by BMW, and Bentleys are going to be made by Volkswagen, though they'll be selling them in the same showrooms. On the other hand, the connection between brands and products has been attenuated, as manufacturers feel free to extend or license their brand names to items that have nothing to do with the products they were originally attached to. Brands have become like butterflies, which flutter down the aisles of the store, trailing their scents behind them and lighting wherever they see a likely shelf. You walk into the opticians, and they have lines of sunglasses that bear the names of Porsche, Armani, and Hobie. It's a real test of brand loyalty, I suppose. What does a Porsche-driving, Armani-shirted surfer do when he's faced with that array? But of course, nobody takes these connections literally anymore. It's just a question of which incantation you want to have scrawled alongside your temple. Linguistically speaking, they're a curious category. Words like Coca-Cola and Chevrolet are among the most frequent common nouns in English, and certainly no other part of the vocabulary is growing more rapidly. And yet, we tend not to think of these as English words at all. They aren't really our collective property the way that dictionary words are. It isn't for us to decide what they mean. They belong to that huge chunk of language that's been privatized over the last 100 years or so. It's one of the most striking developments of modern market capitalism. Certainly neither Adam Smith nor Marx could have foreseen the day when people would pay several $100 million to own a string of syllables. We often think of ourselves as living in a material age, but since the late Middle Ages, there's never been a civilization that attached such a value to mere words, or that was willing to pay for them so dearly.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.